Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us. Continuing to stay with us here. We are about to have a conversation with Edward Wyckoff Williams. He's just written a new piece in The Root that was really good. And we emailed this morning. He's here with us. Not literally in the studio, but he's here with us. And it's called Yes, They're White and Muslim. And we're also joined by Sally Cohn. It's Cohn, not Con, right?
It is Cohn like ice cream. You got it.
Got to make sure I had it right. There are cons, there are cones, but you're a cone. So, so Sally Cohn, who is a writer for Color Lines and an activist, regular contributor to Color Lines and the political analyst of Fox News, is here with us as well. Her piece in Color Lines was the news media's public disservice in Boston as she looked at what the other media, the new media, is doing. And both Edward and Sally, good to have you with us.
Very good to be with you.
So, and folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. I think that this is, we talked about this a little during the earlier part of the week, but you two really kind of nailed a lot in these two pieces that you've written, as did others. Like, I think you mentioned, I think it was your piece that, Edward, that mentioned Joan Walsh's piece,
yes,
or the Sarnoff Brothers White.
Exactly.
To me, it's interesting how so much of the conservative media is running away. I mean, it doesn't want to say that they can't be white. They're not really white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're Muslim, and they come from this other place called Chechnya or someplace.
Which is in the Caucasus Mountains.
The Caucasus Mountains. What does that mean?
Yes, exactly. So, but actually, Mark, what was really interesting for me was to see not just the conservatives running away from that, because most of the conservatives that Joan Walsh talked about were people who were bloggers for places like Breitbart.com or Newsbusters. And we all know, we all being the ones privy to this kind of conversation, know that that's the far right of the Republican Party, right?
Right.
Which, strangely enough, in the Obama age has become quite centrist in the Obama Party, in the Republican Party. But still, it's basically the far right voices. But what was interesting was to see people like John King of CNN and Chris Matthews of MSNBC still be purporting the same kind of rhetoric and coming from that same perspective. And so a part of the point that I wanted to make is that this is a problem with the way that white voices dominate the media conversation, and white males in particular, who are almost blinded to their own white male privilege. Somebody like Chris Matthews obviously is extremely intelligent, extremely progressive, extremely broad-minded. But for him to be asking whether or not these boys look Yemenis is so problematic and shows how small-minded and biased he is, and he's reflective of far too many ignorant Americans. And I think that we need more brown and black voices in our media conversation in order to find balance. But I also thought what Sally talked about in terms of the responsibility of the media was so on point, and it all comes together, because when you recognize your own bias, then you at least balance that out by due diligence and by being slow to make calls, by relying on real expert advice.
Right.
Don't go out and just speak and create lies that masquerade as fact.
Sally, why don't you pick up on that? Because that was your point. One of your points.
Yeah, I mean, I basically have to say it's sort of, you know, as we pretend like, you know, the old media is the old media, they're the dinosaurs, they're dying, you know. Everything happened on Twitter anyway. Who needs reporters and newspapers? They're slow and stale. What we saw in the last week was a reminder of how, as I put it in the piece, you know, we tend to talk about how, you know, the wisdom of crowds, but sometimes crowds can be stupid, and they were this past week, with folks on Reddit and other places jumping to all sorts of really racially motivated assumptions and conclusions and fingering the wrong people.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Sai. I thought you'd stop. Go ahead.
Well, it's just a reminder of why we have journalists and objective media that hopefully, I mean, we're all subject to bias, right? But hopefully the job of professional media is to keep some of that bias in check. And as I put it in the piece, to sort of run against the crowds, right? Just like the first responders at the scene of the bombing were the ones running against the crowds who were fleeing. They were the ones running to help. the media should run against that tide of, sort of knee-jerk popular assumptions and bias, and toward truth, toward fact, toward hopefully something useful.
Yeah, you have a great quote in your piece, and I think that it really says a lot about where media is. And it's this quote you have from Simon Ricketts from The Guardian. Would you like to read it, or I can read it? Either one of us can read it.
Oh, go ahead. You go ahead.
So you have this great quote, and he said, one of the theories you learn when you train to be a journalist is the funnel of news. Imagine a funnel. It's getting all the information about a certain news story poured into it from the top. Wild rumors and hard facts, witness accounts alongside back-of-a-cigarette packet theories. The funnel is the journalist, and the funnel's job is to take all the information from crazy and the correct and pour it with a measure of control into the story. Take out the impurities, crush up the lumps, make the resulting article a distillation of thousands of snippets with no errors. Now, that, Sally, this is what is getting lost here. I mean, and it's not just getting lost in the social media. I mean, it's getting lost when you have CNN and all these other places making these outrageous comments to be ahead of the next media, their competitor.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was just a moment for us all to step back and look, I understand. I mean, I'm not apologizing for anyone, believe me, but there's this sort of, oh my gosh, the media is now defined by being quick and fast, and who can beat Twitter, and who did it first, and there are actually, sort of inside the media chattering class, there's people who report on which news outlet broke, which television station, cable news station broke the story first, and that's again in this sort of era of competition from new media, that's understandable. What I think we need now is a this pendulum to swing the other direction and realize the hopefully measured, thoughtful, more objective, rational analysis that good media, that professional media can bring to bear on a situation. Certainly one of
it's almost as if, Sally, do you think that we need industry standards? Because a part of what I found most disturbing, and I'm sure you did as well, because I mentioned it in my piece and you did in yours, which was the New York Post, which a lot of people don't, particularly New Yorkers, I don't think they realize it's owned by Rupert Murdoch's corporation, and it is essentially used oftentimes as a right-wing media outlet that parades as mainstream. The fact that they put the face of that young Arab-American boy,
yes,
who was clearly brown, who's 17 years old, a track star, who really wanted to run the marathon, that's why he was there. For them to put his face on and call him a bag man, which is an old term for a mafia runner, to do that and then to not apologize after the real facts came out, that this young man actually had absolutely nothing to do with those events, just goes to show how if you start with the funnel, right, if you actually use that analogy, you have literally the most credible sources in news delivering the worst kind of information. And if that is to be funneled down to people, let's say, in social media, in new media, who then rely on those institutions to deliver the real facts, what then are we going to end up with? A hodgepodge of absolute absolute lies, essentially.
I'm not going to obviously comment on specific outlets in the media. And, I think it's worth noting here that just as Twitter isn't a monolith, neither are, is any outlet in the media, right? Most have, journalists or writers or opinion writers who some of us would hold up as great examples and some who would make our stomach turn. And no doubt, some of that is also clouded by ideology, right? So, again, I think it's more about, at the broad brushstroke, the point is more about remembering the role of the media in not trying to sort of, ride the wave of public bad behavior and rush to judgment and assumption and all of that, but to hopefully be a countervailing force. And I think it is extraordinarily more important and often, frankly, more challenging to do this when it comes to, you know, assumptions based on race and gender and all of these things that we, tend to not pay enough attention to.
We have to take a very brief break. We're going to come right back with Sally Cohn and Edward Wyckoff Williams. Join us here at 410-319-8888. We're looking at race, media, what this lesson in Boston teaches us about the media. Where do we go from here? We'll hear some clips as well of some of the things we talked about in case you didn't see or hear them yourself. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're here with Edward Wyckoff Williams, author, columnist, regular contributor to The Root, Huffington Post, and Salon.com. The piece he wrote just most recently in The Root is Yes, They're White and Muslim, and we're here with Sally Cohn, activist, writer, regular contributor to Color Lines, and political analyst at Fox News, and her latest piece in Color Lines, The News Media's Public Service in Boston. And one day we'll just have Sally on by herself to talk about how she juggles Fox News and Color Lines.
Exactly. I would love to see that contract and what that contract looked like.
So,
I throw great parties.
I know that's right. They better be paying you very well.
So let's hear this one clip. This is the clip from John King. Just to give our listeners a sense of what we're talking about, and we'll go to another clip in a minute or two.
From that, I was told that they have a breakthrough in identification of a suspect. I'm told I want to be very careful about this because people get very sensitive when you say these things. I was told by one of these sources who was a law enforcement official that this was a dark-skinned male. The official used some other words. I'm not going to repeat them until we get more information. Because of the sensitivities, there are some people who will take offense even at saying that, and I understand that. I'm just saying this was relayed to me by a reputable law enforcement source, a source who had been briefed on the investigation. I should say that the suspect was a dark-skinned male. That's information that comes from the police. I know there are people out there.
We can't say whether the person spoke with a foreign accent or an American accent or anything like that. That would be premature.
Right. And again, this source did use further language to characterize, and I'm just, as a reporter who's been through a lot of these, who knows that sometimes the information you get does not in the end turn out to be what happens in the end. I'm making a personal judgment, forgive me, but I think it's the right judgment, not to try to inflame tensions, and to just say the law enforcement source was very clear, and again, they've enhanced this video. They have a close-up look at this individual they have on video. They say dropping a package, making a placement that they believe to be the explosive device, and they say it is a dark-skinned male. I'm going to stop there and not go further.
So that to me, first of all, the one thing that hit me about that is that I don't know who his sources are, but he needs to kind of check on his own background, but and who he's relying on. But it's really outrageous that people in the media are so intent on two things. A, that they're so intent on beating the other guy to the mic, to getting to the camera, to getting the story out first, that they're willing to kind of play loose with the truth and just take one source and not check it out. And B, the whole thing about dark-skinned, I mean, and we're talking, you know, can you imagine... I hate harkening back to this, but somebody like Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite getting on the air and doing something like that?
Well, this is a part of the problem. I think what's shocking is that I was not shocked that it was John King who said that, because watching John King and being extremely familiar with his work, he basically almost operates as the Bill O'Reilly of CNN. And it's actually sad that CNN has come to this, because they're basically trying to compete with Fox. So I think some of the points in my article, when you're dealing with people who have a very limited worldview and whose biases imbue their work, even though their work is supposed to be, as Sally said, a public service and should be unbiased, then you end up with statements like what you got with John King. What's so sick and twisted about it is that if we almost sort of take 9/11 out of this and sort of take out sort of the fear of Muslim Islamic terrorists, that basically was almost something that you would just say about any black or Hispanic in America in the light of investigating any crime that the media is reporting on, which is a part of why I wrote the piece that I wrote, because I'm trying to show how Muslims are becoming the new black, that they're always and everywhere the suspects, and they are always guilty before being proven innocent. And that is a story that's deeply embedded in the American experience with respect to African Americans. And the it seems that the religious freedoms that are outlined in the Constitution apply only to non-Muslims now. So it's very sad that that's a part of the legacy of 9/11, that it's beginning to erode at the very values that this country is based upon. And so you have the racial elements that I think were almost blatant in John King's statements, but then you also have these socio-political and religious elements that are more reflected in what the New York Post did and
right.
what Chris Matthews said. And I think that we need to begin to uproot these issues because they are all becoming conflated. And when you have the FCC coming out reporting that the media, despite Barack Obama being in office, is becoming less diverse and more white, that less women and fewer minorities are being hired and working in news and newsrooms and owning networks and working at radio stations, that is a sign that the news that we are absorbing is too biased. We really, really need more diversity. And so that's a part of why I wanted to talk about both race, religion, and xenophobia.
Sally, go ahead. Jump in, please.
No, I mean, I don't disagree with a single thing you said, nor how you said it, and certainly in your piece. You know, I think this is one of these things where it's like we could be Andy Warhol or something. You know, does art imitate life? Does life imitate art? Does the media imitate, our biases? Do our biases fed by the media? And unfortunately, we know it's all a messy soup of all of the above. You know, I think that the... It's like, is this an AA thing or something? The first step is admitting you have a problem, and I have to say, I think, it's that self-effacing, and this is actually true of Twitter as well, the people who sort of said, I got that wrong,
Right.
To have the standards, not to not make the mistake. I mean, I think it's right to go forward and think, and there's a spectrum of mistakes from, falsely reporting something to, plastering some high school kid's, picture and sort of implying he's a suspect on the front of a newspaper. I mean, there's a range, right, of mistakes. But the difference is saying you made the mistake. And let's look at that one example. Reddit said they made a mistake. They said, and let's be honest, they didn't even really make the mistake. It was their sort of community that they created that kind of made this mistake. But as a company, they were willing to take responsibility for it and say that was wrong, whereas the New York Post didn't. And I think it's that sort of transparency and accountability and learning. Look, I don't wake up any morning in this country thinking that we are somehow going to be, racial rainbow harmony on the hill where we've, let go of all of our biases. And, that's not the goal. The goal is to be increasingly self-aware, self-reflective, and frankly, self-critical.
And not just self-aware and self-editing, but also informed, actually truly educated and informed. And I think this is why the Sarnev brothers, I hope I'm saying their name right, I think are a real... opportunity for America to educate themselves. I think Americans have too long lived in this little bubble where everything literally is black and white. And actually, what this presents is an opportunity to, one, see a part of the world that they never hear about. You know, there's been so much reporting about how the fact that President Obama has not actually mentioned Chechnya in the entire 5 years of his presidency. Most Americans simply just don't know where Chechnya is and what the political situation is there.
So
to discover that there are countries outside of Iraq and Iran and Syria where we have this sort of unrest and these tensions, where the faces aren't brown or black, I think is an opportunity to educate people and open their minds in ways that they need to be informed. informed so that they can be properly self-aware.
Let me open the phones here. Several people want to get into this, and we'll let them in, at least some of them, to get in before we have to move on. And the way we pronounce your name, by the way, is it's the Tsarnaev brothers.
Tsarnaev
brothers. 410-319-8888. John, you're on the air. John, you're on the air.
Hello?
John, you're on the air. Turn down your radio, please.
Hello?
You're on the air, John, but you have to turn down your radio.
Hello?
John, you're on the air. Turn down your radio.
Okay.
There
hey,
you go.
I've been listening to the radio, and I kind of agree 100% with the guy who just got done talking.
Edward Wyckoff Williams, yeah.
It's one thing that's been bugging me for quite a while, ever since this thing came off in Boston. The media has traveled the world to find out any and everything they can about these brothers, okay? But what do we know about the Aurora shooter or the white supremacist that shot up the mosque in Wisconsin? That's what I wanted to say. What do we really know about them?
No, I think that we, you know, that it raised another issue with that, too, which is that when you talk about the people you just talked about, you didn't hear the press go, oh, the suspect is white-skinned.
That's brilliant, Mark, because that's a part, first of all, that is actually brilliant. That's a part of the point that I was making about white males being a protected class in this country, that when they commit crimes, it's always somehow explained or excused, which is a part of the media's problem with trying to wrestle with the Caucasian racial identity of these two boys, is they don't have a box for that. They can't really, they don't have terms for that. In the same way that you don't hear people talking about they were white-skinned, you also don't talk about, people don't talk about white-on-white crime. We never hear about how white males commit the majority of the crime in this country. And we don't talk about why white males might need to be profiled for crimes such as gun violence, because they're the ones doing the kind of violence that we saw in Newtown, Connecticut. And so there's this really problematic issue that's almost so deeply embedded in this particular quote-unquote terrorist action. But then beyond that, I wanted to make the point that why is it that when Muslims commit this kind of crime, it's automatically terrorism? But when a young white boy walks into a classroom and shoots and shatters the bones and faces of 20 children, that's not terrorism.
Right.
And we have a Congress and an entire Senate who won't act. There is something deeply problematic at the way that the media is almost responsible for coddling all of us into believing that the enemy is always and everywhere somewhere else and looks different than us.
Edward, that's very powerful. And Sally, we have to go to our next segment, but I'd like you to close it out for us with your thoughts on the end.
I think that's right, and it is fascinating how a lot of people are kind of bending over backwards to suggest that these folks are not whites, although they literally are the definition of Caucasian. They are from the Caucasus. They are Caucasian. And it's also worth noting, for instance, that we don't have a conversation about the fact that whatever their nationality and religion, all of these acts of violence are mostly committed by men. But that sort of speaks to that kind of dominant privilege and sort of unquestioned privilege. We also haven't had a conversation, by the way, that at least according to one study, 62% of the quote-unquote domestic terrorism threats and plots since 9/11 up until now have been by right-wing extremist groups and not by Muslims. So, you know, this... again, sort of where we choose to place blame, and when we say, oh, well, we're going to call this Islamic terrorism, we're going to call this, we're going to call this terrorism, period, and we're not going to talk about, these other things in that way. Again, I completely agree. This needs to be, we need to be doing this with some awareness and intentionality, and not just, allowing these biases that are running through our society to be perpetuated in our reporting.
I want to thank both of you for the writing you do and what you bring to the airwaves here and being willing to get on this show and talk Sally Cohn, activist, writer, regular contributor to Color Lines and political analyst for Fox News. Her latest piece, we've been talking about the news media's public disservice in Boston that was on Color Lines. And Edward Wyckoff Williams, author, columnist, regular contributor to The Root, Huffington Post, and Salon.com. And his piece, Yes, They're White and Muslim, that appeared in The Root. And both of these pieces will be on our website, so you can check with the read them yourselves, and as well as check out their other writings. And Edward and Sally, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure, Mark. Thank you very much.
Take care. Talk to you all soon. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Peter O'Neill. And Pete O'Neill has made this incredible new documentary, All the King's Horses, The Story of Green Oak Park, that takes place right here in Baltimore. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Pete O'Neill.